All this week, we're taking a closer look at health care and the many parts up for debate as Republicans move to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Today's conversation on mandates or requirements was inspired by this recent exchange at a hearing. It's between Congressman Mike Doyle of Pennsylvania, a Democrat, and Illinois Congressman John Shimkus, a Republican. It starts with Doyle, the Democrat.
What mandate in the Obamacare bill does he take issue with? Certainly not with pre-existing conditions or caps on benefits or letting your child stay on the policy to 26. So I'm curious, what is it we're mandating?
Would the gentleman yield?
Yeah, sure.
What about men having to purchase prenatal care? Is that not correct?
Reclaiming my time.
And should they?
Reclaiming my time.
Whoa.
There's no such thing as a la carte.
Regular order.
There's no such thing as a la carte insurance, John. You don't get the.
That's the point. That's the point. We want the consumer to be able to go to the insurance market and be able to negotiate on a plan.
Reclaiming my time. You tell me what insurance company will do that. There isn't a single insurance company in the world that does that, John. So you're talking about something that doesn't exist.
Well, I'm going to reclaim my time right now. Let's bring in Sarah Cliff. She covers health policy for Vox.com. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's unpack what we just heard. We want to talk about mandates, but not initially the mandate everyone thinks of to buy coverage or pay a fee. These other requirements within Obamacare, we heard some of them, letting your child stay on the policy to 26. Now, we just heard that Congressman Shimkus asked about men having to, are men going to have to purchase prenatal care? People don't specifically purchase pieces of care, do they?
No, that's, you know, insurance wouldn't really work if all of us could say, well, I want coverage for my particular disease, but I don't want to pay for the other things. The way health insurance works is you're kind of spreading the costs of all of our health care, all of our very different needs across a large group of people. And that's essentially what is going on with maternity care in the individual market right now, that everyone is required to purchase it, as the congressman was suggesting. If you didn't have that requirement, it would be very hard to get maternity services if you were someone who needed them. The National Women's Law Center, they found before Obamacare, just 12% of plans on the individual market would cover maternity care. And it is it's a big policy debate. Having insurers required to cover maternity care, it does raise premiums a little bit for everybody. But saying that it's okay not to cover it means that women who do use the individual market and who do want to get pregnant, they are going to have to pay a very steep fee to get insurance that would cover their pregnancy.
Well, and again, this was before Obamacare. Not only pay a steep fee, there'd be a required waiting period, sometimes a year or longer. Look, this goes to the heart of what Obamacare did. It required insurers to – it's not that people are required to buy certain things. It's that insurers are required to package them in their coverage, if I've got this right. And this is at least 10 essential health benefits. They include maternity care and hospitalization, prescription drugs. Run through the rest of them.
Yeah, we also have in there, there's a few things that, you know, weren't frequently covered in the individual market before Obamacare. Mental health services, for example, or rehabilitative services, long-term care are in that package. And that package has really been a sticking point in the debate about Obamacare repeal and replace. You know, the drafters of Obamacare, they really, like you said, they wanted to standardize health insurance. They wanted it to be that when you go into the market and you buy this product, you knew what you were getting. Before the Affordable Care Act, there wasn't a lot of standardization in the individual market. It could be really hard to tell, and you'd have to go through a lot of fine print to find out what your benefits actually covered. So Obamacare standardized it, said every insurance plan has to offer these benefits. That drives up the cost of insurance. When you make health insurance more robust, the premiums get more expensive because the insurance plan is paying for more services. Yeah. So there's, you know, a constant trade-off there about what you want to require and what you want to ask people to pay for in premiums.
They include lab services, preventive and wellness services, chronic disease management, pediatric services, including oral and vision care. These are some of those 10 requirements that be in packages that are sold. By the way, we should mention Seema Verma, who is President Trump's head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, also said in her confirmation hearings that maternity benefits should be optional in those health plans. So debate, which is an old debate, is being reactivated. And again, the thinking of including these requirements or mandates is that your money is fungible. Why, while some single men who don't have children, or single women for that case, may be paying for some maternity care, women are paying for prostate screenings that they are not using. So the Republicans don't have enough votes to just completely change the law, Obamacare. But it's been said that they can, the phrase it's sometimes used is skinny up some of these requirements. Are they skinnying up the requirement for maternity care or prescription drugs?
So they haven't taken any action on that yet. Republicans would like to end this essential health benefit package. Every proposal I saw in the lead up to the American Health Care Act, their new replacement bill, said the essential health benefits go, insurers, you get to decide what is covered. The challenge is they are trying to use this kind of arcane Senate process called reconciliation to pass their bill. It is a good process for Republicans because they only need a simple majority in the Senate. They don't have to get to the 60-member filibuster-proof majority. But it is also a bad method because everything they do has to relate directly to the federal budget. And it would be very hard to make the argument that re-regulating the insurance industry is somehow a budgetary action. So when we saw the American Health Care Act come out, it was actually a bit surprising. They said, you know what, we're not going to re-regulate the essential health benefits through this bill. We don't think we have the authority to do that. What you might see is some regulatory action from Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, Medicare Administrator Seema Verma, that they might do a few things to lessen the essential health benefits through the different regulations they put out. It's not entirely clear how they would do that. Those 10 categories we were talking about earlier, they are written into law. They are part of the Affordable Care Act. So that makes it a little harder to tackle this in a regulatory way. But one required benefit that you could tackle through regulations is the birth control mandate. Mm-hmm. There's no language in the Affordable Care Act that says all insurers have to cover birth control without copay. That was completely done through regulations of the Obama administration. So that's a mandate they could tackle very easily and without any help from Congress.
Because, again, it's not in the law. It's a regulation, this requirement that insurers cover birth control with copay, with some religious exceptions. Listen, you said that it raised some of the premiums to make these requirements. Did it lower costs elsewhere? You know, I'm just wondering, some of them, for instance, rehabilitative and habilitative services. Habilitative services are for, you know, people who have ongoing autism, for instance. Did requiring coverage of some of these lessen costs elsewhere?
That's really tricky to measure. It's a great point about when you invest in these kind of preventative services, you know, ranging from habilitative services, prenatal care, that you can see dividends elsewhere. But it can be really hard to measure, and it usually doesn't get paid back to the insurance company. This is, you know, one reason we all talk about prevention saving money, but often those savings are so far down the line that it doesn't really actually recoup to the person who is paying for the preventive care up front. But yeah. I think prenatal care is a good example of this, that if you're having healthier pregnancies, it's pretty right. reasonable to assume you're going to have better outcomes and maybe cheaper care for that baby when it's born. It's really difficult to measure. There is a little bit of research on the birth control mandate, for example, that suggests that does save money. When more people are preventing pregnancies, when they're taking contraceptives regularly, insurance premiums, there's decent research suggesting they'll go down because you'll have less unintended pregnancies. But it's a tricky area to measure.
And just to be clear, this idea of buying a la carte, buying just the insurance that you want, just cover me for I might have a knee problem, but I don't want other stuff. Is it just the idea that it's all fungible? I mean, it's like requiring the mandate under Obamacare that everybody buy it, not just the people who are sick, the healthy people kick in as well. Is it the same thinking?
It's a little bit similar. It kind of is a very different theory of insurance, that you should be able to pick and choose the benefits. And it's a little hard to see how that works, because, you know, one of the ideas of packaging all these benefits together
quickly,
is that
yep. mm-hmm.
some people will use them, some people won't. When everyone gets to pick their benefits, the premiums are going to be very high because you can assume all the
right.
people with knee problems are choosing the knee plan.
Right, right. Sarah Cliff, who covers health policy for Vox, as we try to continue to pick away at the health debate. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.